radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
Yeah, you know, excited. You know, I know what the atmosphere is going to be like. You know, this crowd here is always great, especially in the playoffs. You know, so hopefully can feed off that and just try to continue to pitch like I have all season.
That's Justin Verlander, who we have not seen pitch in the postseason since October 29th of 2019, nearly 3 years ago. Game 6 of the 2019 World Series against the Washington Nationals. What's going on, people? It's finally bleeping here. Astros in the playoffs. Playoffs baseball in Houston. I've been dying for this. I think a lot of you guys know me to be a bit of a baseball casual, but I also like to do this from time to time, at least when I'm, you know, with my significant other, the wife, Houston Astros. I like to pretend that the first round of the playoffs is the American League Championship Series and that the divisional round of the playoffs is the preseason. And that's where you're at right now as the Astros open things up today, 2:30 at Minute Maid Park against the Seattle Mariners. I am wearing the shirt. You guys can figure out how to make me an Astros fan. I do have Venmo. I will take bribes. But look, as someone who, while living in Houston, has seen the Astros go 1-0 in World Series, it is your responsibility to bring me into the fold. It is up to you. And I got to say, Twitter.com/Gallant says, Paul ain't going so hot right now. Sean Mapes, behind the glass on the Paul Gallant Show, your thoughts on, first off, the shirt. Second off, your thoughts on the lack of Houston action in the early polls.
Well, I haven't looked at the early returns on the ballots, but I think only 20% of precincts are reporting, so it's too early to call for Kornacki and the gang. But the shirt, I mean, I knew this whole season has you
leading up to this,
you leaving Seattle, loading up your car and driving to Houston, I arguably has led to this moment of you wearing this shirt the day of game one of the ALDS. Now, in a perfect world, maybe it was like the ALCS, a little bit more juice to it. Best of seven instead of best of five. Well, that's nitpicking. But no, this is your Super Bowl. This is your Brady Quinn's girlfriend or sister. And
right, with AJ Hawk. Yes,
yeah,
Notre Dame, Ohio
State.
Jersey.
This is everything for you.
It's on the table,
guys. I would say I'm happy for you. I'm not really happy
for
you.
I'm
more disgusted.
You're disgusted. Yeah. I can tell. Everyone's disgusted. I put this up. Who should I root for in the sports match today? 26.2% say Astros. 52% say Mariners. And 21.8% says everyone hates you. Now, that's understandable.
That's not higher.
Right. Yeah. I understand the hatred one. I did think it would be a little bit more close. There's still time.
I'll go vote for the everyone hates you one.
Twitch.tv/ESPN975. Asymmetric Risk says, how much does it take for you to take off that shirt? This is not OnlyFans. This is not OnlyFans. You want to see the pecs? That comes on a different subscription service and a higher level tier. Anyway, we'll figure out who I'm rooting for before this game starts. I want to talk about playoff Justin Verlander. Justin Verlander's had a good amount of time off now. First off, since his last playoff appearance, it has been, again, almost 3 years. But also, he has been sitting back because of the way that baseball's playoffs work. I'm not going to bitch and moan about it anymore. I do think it's kind of lame that the Mariners have gotten a couple of days off to get geared up for this game and to sort of reset their rotation. But Verlander hasn't pitched in about a week. And he's had good postseason numbers for his career, but they're not lights out like you've seen Justin Verlander with a 1.75 ERA in 2022. 2019 in particular was a real struggle for Verlander. He pitched 35 and a third innings in that postseason. He allowed 30 hits. 8 of them were home runs. He walked 14, and while he did strike out 38, his ERA was 4.33. Does that concern you at all? Do you look at Justin Verlander going into today's game and just think about some of the postseason struggles that he's had? I took a look back at his time with the Astros to see what the issue's been in the past. In 2017, he didn't have the best game two against the Los Angeles Dodgers. The fifth and the sixth inning, that's when they started putting things together. Next year, game five of 2018, he allowed a home run in the third. He allowed a home run in the sixth. But 2019 is the weird year, the last time we saw him in the postseason. In game four, he gave up a home run and three earned runs in the bottom of the first in the divisional round against Tampa Bay. ALCS against the New York Yankees, he gave up two home runs in the first. Game two of the 2019 World Series against the Nationals, he gave up two runs on a double in the first, then a seventh inning home run. Game six of 2019 against Washington, he gave up a run in the first, two home runs in the fifth. So working entirely off his time in Houston, here is sort of what to expect from a bad version of Justin Verlander, because of course we hold him to a very high standard. You're going to know right away just how good he is. You're going to know, especially based off of 2019, in the first inning, you will be able to determine what Verlander you are getting. And he might not be working deep into games for you. He might not be going six, seven, eight innings. He might not, because that has been historically where lineups have started to figure him out. That's true of a lot of pitchers. It's not unique to Justin Verlander, but I do think it's been interesting to take a look at his playoff numbers where he's got an ERA in the mid threes. You would think it would be higher just based off of the course of his career. But how has he done against the Seattle Mariners this season? The numbers are actually pretty damn awesome. He did have one bad start where he allowed four home runs, but on the season, he is 5-1 with a 2.34 ERA. And over the course of those games, I mean, outside of the one game, he has looked very, very good. And if you take a look at basically the last several starts that he has had, going all the way back to May 27th, a 6-1 Astros loss to the Seattle Mariners, where he went six, but allowed four home runs, six earned runs, he's been damn good. In fact, he has only allowed, get this, four home runs since the start of June. Just four. Against the Mariners the next time, June 7th, 12 strikeouts over seven innings. July 23rd, seven innings, nine strikeouts, one earned run. Against the Mariners, July 29th, 7 2/3 innings, five strikeouts. He has done damn well against Seattle this season. I don't think Seattle's necessarily going to have some sort of advantage against Verlander. I just wonder about Verlander's past postseason performances and if maybe teams have a different approach for him in the postseason than they would in the regular season. Maybe they come out aggressive. Honestly, based off of 2019, that might be the strategy. Don't wait. Don't work counts. Be aggressive. If he's going to throw you a fastball right away on the first pitch of the game, swing as hard as you can at it. See what happens. If you're Julio Rodriguez, that's a pretty damn way, a good way to open up this series for the Seattle Mariners. So if you have thoughts on this series, 713-780-3776, we will be taking calls, texts all show long. You can also join on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. You can join on Twitter as well. At Gallant says, some last thoughts from Verlander. I did think it was interesting that he brought this up. He was asked about the amount of time that he has had since the last time he pitched. And of course, the couple of games that the Mariners have been able to play along the way because of the way that baseball's playoffs have been transformed in 2022.
I understand the format. I understand the days off. It's just an interesting sport where you go and play, you know, almost every day. And then all of a sudden in the playoffs, you know, you take 4 or 5 days off. You know, I don't know how it's going to play out. You know, I know that we have left no stone unturned to make sure that we're ready and capable, though.
Verlander on the season, a lot more rest than in years past, as pointed out by Todd the Show on twitch.tv/ESPN975. Usually over 200 innings pitched. This year he is at 175, and they really managed those innings towards the very end. We will see, of course, though, if, you know, a couple of days off, perhaps with the Mariners playing the way that they did on Friday, especially Saturday, catching lightning in a bottle. Do they feel super confident? Do they decide to themselves, you know what? Who cares if Verlander's got a 1.75 ERA who has led the American League in wins, who's going to win the American League Cy Young Award. We're just going to go after him right away. I think that's the correct strategy if you are the Seattle Mariners in this one. But if you have thoughts, 713-780-3776. Let's get pumped for this. You know, crack open a tall boy or whatever the hell you might have. Oh, it's Paul, it's too early. It's 10:15. You can't drink right now. Oh, that's erroneous. I've watched Game of Thrones. Cersei Lannister used to be walking around the Red Keep at 9 in the morning with a glass of vino. Maybe I don't go red wine to open up the day, but a little champagne, Bloody Mary. I don't know, a little something that you might have snuck into work. Perhaps a flask of some sort. It's time to get ready, guys. Only a couple of hours till game time. You know, I know that I have something in my back pocket for you that's not quite, you know, a shot, but does give you a little bit of energy. You know, it's some of that like ACL energy, if you will. Here it is. You've heard the song. Why did they argue the umpire's call? Why did the fielders crash into walls? Why do you think the pitchers throw smoke? Why do you think they go for broke? Who says it's only a game? It's the playoffs. Why do the catchers wear iron masks? Astros. Why do they dive for the dive on the glass? Astros. Why do they go head first into home? Why do the losers feel all alone? Who says it's only a game? When you want it, you give it all you've got. The war's not over till the final shot. It's pride and glory and fame. Who says it's only a game? Why do you so many questions. Why do you think they call them spikes? But it would be nice to get answers. Why do they give it more than they've got? Why do they always reach for the top? With me now. Who says it's only a game? Astros baseball. We're open all day on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. 713-780-3776. Let's get hyped for the Astros, the Mariners, in a couple of hours. First, though, let me tell you about my friends at TGS Insurance. Look, guys, if you own a home, you want to save a little bit of money, right? Insurance rates are skyrocketing. This inflation has made everything more expensive, including your home policy. But I'm hearing of customers who had 30, 40, even 50% increases before making the switch to TGS. Why do so many of my listeners switch to TGS? Because they make it fast and easy to save money. Their instant quoting system shops the market and delivers you savings in 15 seconds. You can't afford to wait any longer. The time to save is right now. So grab that phone and text the word money, M-O-N-E-Y, to 232323. Their system will ask for your address. Send that back and you'll get your full quote with excellent coverage within 15 seconds. This company and the savings are legit. TGS now has over 2,000 five-star reviews, and their average customer from 2022 is still saving over $800 on their home insurance. Simple, fast, easy, big savings, the TGS insurance way. Let them work for you today. One more time, text money to 232323 to get your home insurance quote and save big today.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Well, I mean, this guy, he knows how to, he knows what it's about. And, you know, he's been the horse many times. You know, we're so glad to have him. I mean, this guy is, you know, one of the leaders on the team. Guys follow him, and guys feel very, very confident and, you know, with him on the mound. And, you know, he's a very confident young man, and we feel very fortunate to have him.
That's Astros manager Dusty Baker on Justin Verlander. Also of note today, as we get ready for Game 1, of the American League Divisional Series between the Houston Astros and Seattle Mariners, Baker said this yesterday, that Mauricio Dubon, Justin Verlander's personal center fielder, will probably not start today. I have yet to see a lineup Sean Mapes behind the glass shaking your head.
I don't like this.
Why not?
He's his personal center fielder.
You want to have him feeling his most comfortable.
Exactly. What's his postseason numbers?
Mauricio Dubon?
No.
Justin Verlander.
Dubon is furniture in this. It's whatever makes Verlander happy.
Okay.
So what's his regular season number? It's like a
1.75 ERA. Postseason career ERA like 3.4. Yeah.
Do you want regular season Justin Verlander or postseason Justin Verlander? That's need to make it seem like it's a regular season.
That's a fantastic question, Sean. So that's on the table. 713-780-3776. We do have some comments on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. And we'll keep you posted on the actual lineup itself and whatever updates that we do have at game time. The Twitch has been giving me a lot of crap because I'm wearing my half Mariners, half Astro shirt. Listen, you guys can solve this. You just have to vote, Actalon says, for me to be rooting for the Astros. Holly Rachel Worshipper asks me, how can you love Seattle? Wasn't that a traumatic experience for you and your cat, Aria? Yes. Google Paul Gallant Chill, D-A-W-G, for a little context on that. Your boy may or may not have been red-pilled. But I do love Mariners fans. That's it. Seahawks fans and I never really got along because I, like with all football, was a bit of a condescending prick. Being a Patriots fan, being an elitist, you know, like, I know how football works. Not everyone does. Only a certain few people, followers of Tom Brady, understand it the way that I do. But Mariners fans were great with me. We had a great time. They remind me of Texans fans. Nihilistic, jaded, angry people that just expect the worst to happen at all times. So, really, of all the things that happened in Seattle, my time hanging out with Mariners fans was number one. Some funny comments, though, on the Twitch. I've brought this up a couple of times, how people consistently ask me whether or not I'm gay, whether I'm at bars or at ACL this past weekend. E315, don't be surprised if at least three people ask you if you're gay wearing that shirt. Hey, I don't feel like this makes me look like I lean one way or another. Chris from Sam Houston, the Seattle part of his shirt is on the same side as the gay ear for an earring. That's all you need to know. Hey, I have no response for that. All I can say is that I'm just going to read the comment and move on. All right, speaking of outrage, we all watched the Monday Night Football game last night, right? And I think we're all in agreement that this is one of the worst calls that anyone has ever made in a football game. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, take it away.
Carr is hit from behind. And the ball is taken away by Jones. A flag comes out on the play. And we'll see how this one's going to be figured out. A forced fumble and a fumble recovery by Chris Jones. He just took it away from Carr. That ball is out. I think it is a fumble, and I think Carl's going
personal
full body foul.
Way. Roughing the passer. Number 97. Defense. 15-yard penalty. Automatic first down.
So there it is.
It was a very confusing moment. When you watch it take place at first, you're like, wait, did he strip the ball? And then there's a review, and you're wondering, okay, is it going to be Chiefs ball all of a sudden? You saw the flag out there. I had a feeling that it might be a personal foul, but I wasn't 100% sure. And then all of a sudden, yeah, you heard the referee step in there. His name, by the way, is Carl Sheffers. And I mean, it's a bang-bang kind of play. I don't want to give the ref too much crap because I do think that there is an overreaction to what happened to Tua Tagovailoa. I talked about it on Monday. When you look back to Grady Jarrett's roll-down sack of Tom Brady, they are trying, I think, right now, less than 2 weeks from Tua getting his coconut wrung on national TV, they're trying to stay away from that as best they can. But it was still just an awful call as a byproduct of an awful rule. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, my favorite part about those two is that they don't give a bleep. They don't protect the shield. They rip the call and stayed talking about the call for, I want to say, 3 minutes as a Chiefs crowd continued to boo for what felt like 15 minutes.
I mean, at some point, you have to be realistic with where the defensive player, what's he supposed to do, disappear? I mean, he's there. The ball comes out. The ball's in his gut.
too much. I mean, my hope is the competition committee looks at this in the next set of meetings and, you know, we take the dresses off.
By the way, that last comment led to some bleeping takes. I mean, you talk about dresses in 2022 and I guess imply that wearing a dress makes you a little bit more effeminate, soft, insert other words that I'm not allowed to say on the air, and you're going to get takes like this from Rachel Shalom Libdell. A truly awful call, but let's not overlook Troy Aikman's sexist comment. My hope is the competition committee looks at this in the next set of meetings and we take the dresses off. I responded to her because she was not outraged about the right thing. Yesterday was Columbus Day, but it's actually Indigenous Peoples Day now. And I said, and yet you're overlooking Chiefs fans doing the tomahawk chop on Indigenous Peoples Day. Shaking my head. Hashtag cancel.
Also, men can wear dresses too.
That's Boom. True.
Outmaneuvered you.
It's 2022, Sean.
She's being sexist.
Yeah. Have ever heard of a kilt? Also being racist, not recognizing Scottish culture. And Irish culture? Did the Irish wear it too?
That's racist. I think it's just Scottish.
I'm both Irish and Scottish, Sean Mapes. I'm allowed to do it.
Oh, okay.
Are you?
I'm half Irish.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm more Irish than you. I'm like 75% Irish. Maybe 65%.
Let's not go down this road.
I'm more of a pure Irishman than you. So it led to some takes. I think Michael Wilbon also said, hey, I don't want to have to say it, but both Derek Carr and Tom Brady get sacked, and it's a personal foul that Patrick Mahomes does, and it's not. I'm not going to say it, but if it happens again, I'm not holding back. I was like, what are you going to do? You're going to write a letter to the NFL about how mad you are because of like possible racism when it comes to roughing the passer? Because that's what you're implying. I mean, you may as well just say it.
Like, no, stop. He didn't say it.
He did, though.
He didn't say it.
Yes, he did,
Don't
Sean.
Make him say it.
Sean, he said it. He did say it.
Don't make Wilbon say it.
That call was awful. I mean, look, you even had Booger McFarland and Adam Schefter, and Booger constantly goes out of his way to say, oh, in our league. They continued to crush the call. Here's Booger and Adam Schefter crushing the call further.
If you look closely, watch Chris Jones' left hand tries to break his fall. So that lets you know he's not landing with his full body weight on the quarterback. And if I'm in that position, there's really no other way to make that play. So this is a terrible call. You couple that with what happened yesterday in Tampa with Grady Jarrett. That is 2 days in a row where the NFL referees, and everybody's seen it, has made two bad calls as a defensive lineman and a defender. I don't know how we're supposed to get these quarterbacks on the ground.
The only people who thought that the call in the game yesterday on Tom Brady was a sack was the official who made the call. Nobody else thought that was roughing the passer. This is now another penalty to add on to
2 days in a row.
2 days in a row, indeed. I mean, it's the centerpiece of the NFL right now. Now it's not about concussions. Now it's about, okay, well, we've gone too far. Some people were putting out, hey, there's only two choices here. Either you protect quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes so that you don't have to see quarterbacks like, say, Chase Daniel is still in the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know if he is. But say, insert random backup Brian Hoyer or anybody else who's behind him. Do you want to see one of those backup quarterbacks? Or do you want to see these bad personal foul penalties where a guy lands on a quarterback and steals the ball from him as he is landing and actually braces himself up, as you heard Booger McFarland say, with his left arm? I'm of the belief that it should be this way. The NFL has turned quarterbacks into the diplomat from Lethal Weapon 2. They've got diplomatic immunity now. And I think that's ridiculous. It's a violent sport. Why should a quarterback be under a completely different set of rules? If you're concerned about your quarterback getting hurt because you have a bad offensive line or because he's injury prone, it's on you to get a good backup. It's on you to develop your backup. I mean, shoot, I feel like in the 90s, and maybe this is revisionist history or maybe this is just selective memory, but I felt like there were good backup quarterbacks across the league. Steve Young was Joe Montana's backup for a time. Jeff Hostetler won a Super Bowl as Phil Simms' backup. you've had a lot of quarterbacks that have gotten taken out, and the backup quarterback steps in because it's a team game, and he does the job. Nick Foles won a Super Bowl for the Philadelphia Eagles behind Carson Wentz, who was in the midst of an MVP season that year. What I don't like about it is that it's a violent game. Quarterbacks are handsomely paid. I don't think you have to overprotect them. Things are going to happen. You can't control it. I mean, you could still easily get hurt on a play where that happens. Are you going to stop defensive linemen from just touching quarterbacks altogether? Is it going to become training camp practice where they're wearing red jerseys and the play has to be whistled dead by a ref when somebody comes nearby? If you don't like this, I'm a believer that we should make defense violent again and get a good backup quarterback if you're concerned about your quarterback potentially getting injured. You can't hit them while they slide. You can't touch them on their way out of bounds. You can't love tap them on the head. You can't dive too low for them. Like, it's hard to be a defender in this league. And I think it's bogus. Quarterbacks are under a completely different set of rules, and I get that people watch the league for the quarterbacks, but I also watch the game for the violence just as much. 713-780-3776 if you want to jump in on that conversation. We will also continue to talk about the Houston Astros as they get ready for their first game of the playoffs against the Seattle Mariners in just a couple of hours. Don't go anywhere. It's the most interactive sports talk show in Houston.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You know, there's nothing like it here in Houston when the stadium's rocking. Everybody's in here. The fans are going. You can see orange everywhere. It's a big lift for the players, and we appreciate the fan support.
That's Astros owner Jim Crane. I'm very curious as to what the crowd will be like for an early afternoon playoff game in a city that has seen a whole lot of playoff games over the years. You can understand how maybe there's some people out there who are like, yeah, I've been to a bunch of playoff games. Maybe I'm going to save my money for an ALCS appearance. Maybe I'm going to save my money for a World Series appearance. Question to you on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston, 713-780-3776. Say you took the day off from work or from school. What excuse did you use? What did you say today? I don't think that there are many people who will buy said excuse, but I will give you props for trying. If you did make a call or an email last night or a couple of days ago when you figured out that the game was going to be played Tuesday afternoon, what was the approach? How are you finding yourself at this game? And how intoxicated could you theoretically be by the start of a 2:30 first pitch game? Twitch.tv/ESPN975. Chris from Houston says, I'm saving my money for right now. I think that's probably how I would go if I had been to a couple of deep in the playoff games. There is a part of me, though, that because this is a divisional game, I think there's a little extra juice attached to it. You were reminding the Seattle Mariners of who they are. A couple of other comments from the Twitch as we get closer and closer to game number one. And before we dive into the NFL really quickly, and Fuentes Respecter, in response to Dusty Baker saying, hey, we probably aren't going to use Mauricio Dubon, Justin Verlander's personal valet center fielder, a utility fielder for depth is important. Click didn't say Dubon must start when Verlander is on the mound. Dusty was the one who said that in interviews. And based off of Dusty's comments yesterday, I'm assuming that he and James Click had a conversation about that. You got to have more offense. Todd the Show says defense was important to win 106 games, but Dusty knows we need more offense against the Mariners. One final thought, and I agree with this. This is from King of All Twitches, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Shouldn't there be a gentleman's agreement to not talk Texans on a bye week? Yes. That's as much Texans as we're going to talk. Yes. All right, let's go quickly around the NFL.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush!
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. Per Rob Motti, the NFL did not give officials a directive to emphasize roughing the passer penalties in the wake of Tua Tagovailoa. He continues in his tweet writing, roughing calls are down 45% from last year. It'll be discussed at owners' meetings next week like everything else, but the rule change isn't expected. Making it reviewable doesn't seem to be an option. That's a weird one. We didn't get time to play this in the last segment, so Sean, throwing a curveball at you. Chris Jones was asked, hey, what could be done to potentially make things better when it comes to these roughing the passer penalties? I thought he had a pretty good idea, and it does involve review.
If we're able to view it in the booth and the referees can get a second look because it's happening so fast, maybe we can change that because now it's getting absurd. You know what I'm saying? Now it's causing teams games. You know, that was a fourth down stop on Grady Jarrett. That team would have got the ball back and you know, who knows what would have happened. But for them not to be able to look at that, you know, when you sit on videos, you know, when it's faster than you on the field, it happened that fast, you know, the ref, they might see something different. But when they're able to, like, look at the video and see that it's not roughing the passers, a lot of these roughing the passers would be called back.
Do you want more replay in football, though? That's the drawback to Chris Jones. We have it in college football, Sean, and it sometimes drags games to a halt when you have a review, especially when the referee decides to not overturn the call he originally made.
Yeah, that's the thing with the pass interference review rule change that they did, I think, for only 1 year, I want to say in 2020, that, yeah, they just never overturned. It was probably like one for 300 or yeah, however many times they reviewed it, that they actually overturned the call on the field. So if it's going to be like that, then no, you can keep it. Like, whatever. Because that's worse because you're stopping the game to also get the call wrong still.
Spot of the ball rulings, those almost are never overturned. And you're right, Sean, in that the pass interference was never overturned in that 1 year where they ran with it. And this probably wouldn't be either. Refs generally will protect themselves when they find themselves in a situation where they look really bad. And it's funny because everyone has eyes, and is there a way to hold them more accountable? Albert Breer tweeted last night that it's kind of ridiculous that after a game, there is a referee who speaks with one reporter who asks that referee questions, and that's it. But I don't think annoying a referee in a press conference is really holding one more accountable. All you can really do is get rid of these refs. And the problem is that to get a referee up to speed to call an NFL game, that person needs tons of experience at a lower level. He has to go up to the next level and continue to get better as a referee. There is no easy solution here. I'm open to the idea of replay. I do think, though, that it likely would lead to little change. How about just let's ease up with some of this quarterback overprotection and have a better backup quarterback, because it's a team game. It shouldn't be a quarterback game. I know that it's transformed into that over the years, but a lot of that has to do with the rules. Didn't used to be this way. It really didn't. To see how things have changed from the 90s to now, it does bum me out a little bit. It is closer to flag football these days. It's not entirely, of course. It's still a violent, physical game, but it has changed a lot, and quarterbacks are so overprotected. The other big controversy in last night's game was when the Las Vegas Raiders scored a touchdown. Derek Carr and Davante Adams looked very good. Josh Jacobs looked very good to make it a one-point game very late, about 5 minutes to go, but not super late. Josh McDaniels and the Raiders decided to go for two. They handed the football off to Josh Jacobs. It was stuffed. McDaniels was asked about the decision to go for two so early because ultimately, that's why the Chiefs won.
Felt like in that situation, they had kind of had a lot of momentum offensively, obviously, in the second half. And just we had a play that we felt really good about. We thought we would get a look that gave us a shot at it for sure. We had a chance. We had a fair fight at it. You know, they played it a little bit better than we did and gave ourselves an opportunity to take the lead there and, you know, and then maybe put a little extra pressure on them when they had the ball. You know, nothing more, nothing less. Just trying to be aggressive, trying to win the game. And I know it was 4.5 or whatever the time was, but our team felt good about it and just, you know, felt like that was the right call at the right time.
I get mad at groupthink online. There was a lot of people that were saying that was the worst call that they've seen a head coach make. It was too early. And then there was a lot of expanded logic as to, well, okay, if you get the two-point conversion and get the lead, well, then the Chiefs are just going to march down the field and go for it on fourth down, and eventually they're going to get a field goal or a touchdown. Or they might get stopped. And then this thought process continued saying, oh, yeah, well, if the Raiders don't get it, then the Chiefs are just going to run the ball, and they're going to run the clock out. And once again, to that I said, or they get a stop. Because here's the deal. Sometimes it's just good to get more points than the other team. I don't know how many people have thought of that one before, but with the way that Josh Jacobs was running in that game, averaging 7.8 yards a carry, I didn't hate that call to hand the football off to him up the middle and to see what would happen, especially considering they just threw a 50-yard touchdown pass where he had four defensive linemen rushing after Derek Carr. They're running forward. Now they have to run all the way to the other side of the field. They're probably gassed, and that's the perfect time to potentially get them on their heels and push them back. Just a thought. I didn't hate the call. I felt like everyone in the groupthink online was a little bit over the top when it comes to all saying, oh, that was a terrible decision by Josh McDaniels. Is it the smartest decision in the world? I can understand an argument against it, but look, you're 1-3. You're playing the Chiefs. You're not expected to win. You're on the road, and you had the defense on its heels. Jacobs just got stopped. Sometimes it's that simple. We always crush these moves when they don't work out, and then you never do it again.
I honestly thought that the Chiefs going for two before the touchdown before that was more dubious to not just go up eight, but to try to go up nine, which, I mean, going up nine is two possessions, but there's still even more. If we said Josh McDaniels went for two too early, that's even earlier that the Chiefs went for two. That one, to me, I'd rather have just gone up eight than tried to go up nine, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you on that front. All right, Sean, we have figured out who will be on the Houston Astros for this series against the Seattle Mariners. The postseason roster released. We will react to who made it and who didn't, including one person. I'm so thankful this guy's off the roster. Really, I'm really thankful. We will talk about that roster next. But first, I got to tell you about my friends at BUSR.com/ESPN. Look, we live in a world where the Houston Astros are once again in the playoffs. And don't you want to put a little extra something-something on top of rooting for the Astros to make you maybe a little bit louder, to maybe get you a little bit more, I don't know, feeling angsty about the game? Add some spice to your life. Well, go to BUSR.com/ESPN. You'll double your deposit within the first 24 hours of signing up. And you can bet on baseball. You can bet on college football. You can bet on the NFL, horse racing. They have roulette and blackjack too. Whatever you want to gamble on, BUSR.com/ESPN, where you sign up, has it. They also have a prop builder allowing you to create your own prop bets. Maybe you can put together some sort of crazy parlay. Some people might get really crazy. Justin Verlander, he's had some issues early on in games, his last couple of postseason starts. Maybe a bet on Justin Verlander to allow a home run in the first inning. I'm not doing it, but maybe you're crazy. You can do it at BUSR.com/ESPN. Sign up today, double your deposit today, and win today. BUSR.com/ESPN.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports. Houston's most interactive and possibly radioactive sports talk show continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You know, their pitching staff is really good. Their hitting, their lineup is really good. They never give in, as you saw in the series against Toronto. You know, they grind out at bats. You know, they don't make it easy. Obviously, they're playing good baseball right now. So, having seen them a lot, it's interesting. I don't know, you know, how that really plays out, but you know, an in-division rival, you know, at this point in the year, we know each other so intimately, makes it interesting.
That's Astros pitcher Justin Verlander, who gets the start today for the Astros, game one of the ALDS against the Seattle Mariners. On the season, he is 5-1 with a 2.34 ERA against Seattle. He has been dominant against the Mariners in his last few starts against them. On June 7th, he went 7 innings with 12 strikeouts, allowing just one earned run. On July 23rd, he went 7 innings, 9 strikeouts in that one. July 29th, 7 2/3 innings, 5 strikeouts. It is, though, I think, worth mentioning that Verlander's worst start of the season came on May 27th against the Mariners. In 6 innings, he allowed 6 earned runs, 10 hits. 4 of those 10 hits were home runs. The Astros did release the roster for the ALDS. And I think it's very interesting to note 2 guys who were left off, because I did not want to see either of these guys. I thought it was just going to be one. But both Will Smith, your lefty specialist, who you traded for at the trade deadline, and Phil Maton, who is technically your other lefty specialist, even though he's a right-handed pitcher, they were both left off the roster. Instead, Hunter Brown, rookie, he made it. The rest of the Astros pitching staff also features Jose Urquidy and Luis Garcia. Some people thought that he might be left off. And, of course, the obvious guys, Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez, Lance McCullers Jr., Christian Javier, Ryan Presley, Ryan Stanek, Hector Neris making it somewhat surprising, Brian Abreu making it somewhat surprising, but I'd rather, I guess, have the two of them. You only have 2 catchers. Some people were wondering if Yainer Diaz was going to make the team. He did not. It's just Martin Maldonado and Christian Vasquez. So, all in all, the other surprise as far as actual day-to-day players, David Hensley actually made the roster. Your massive second baseman who is 6'7". So, any thoughts on that? 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. I am very good with the fact that both Will Smith and Phil Maton are off. In fact, when I was listing my 3 biggest concerns for the Houston Astros going into the playoffs, that was number 2. Just the existence of those 2 guys. The other one was whether or not Jeremy Pena is going to be able to make it happen. And of course, hey, are we going to get the same Justin Verlander that we had a couple of years ago? Robert wants to talk about the Astros on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. 713-780-3776. What's going on, Robert?
Paulie G, how are you, man?
Robert, yo.
Here, known as O'Rockets G on Twitch, so you know how it's going. Heading to the game. Ain't nothing but a G thing. Paulie G, O'Rockets G. It's going to be great. We're going to put up a great game. Going to have a good time. We're going to dominate this guy who's a guy named Gilbert.
Logan Gilbert.
That in Houston Sports Radio is not good. And got my daughter here, Grace. She wants to not say hi. She's not going to be social right now. I don't blame her. But it's going to be a good time, man. I'm excited. Picking up the girlfriend or family.
Ooh.
Rolling to the game. So the marination is going to be on the low side, but I'm excited. It's time to get it started.
What's the beverage of choice for the marination, Robert? You do say it's going to be on the low side. I understand that's an early day. We're not all, you know, absolute degenerates like myself, but what's going to be the marination of choice?
Probably Jack and Coke.
Okay.
That's the standard. So
okay.
Why not celebrate the right way?
I've always found that Jack Daniels is the angry drink. So that's just my own personal experience with it. So to each their own. But, Robert, that's awesome. Have fun at the game. And get rowdy. Get pumped up. I appreciate that phone call from Robert. You're on your way into the game, 713-780-3776. I am curious as to the people who skipped work. How did you figure it out? Some people on the Twitch say that traditionally they go with the I'm sick route. Are bosses allowed to question you on that? Are they going to pull a principal in Ferris Bueller's Day Off and try to go to your house and determine whether or not you're actually there? Kind of ironic that, you know, what he was doing could have potentially gotten him sent to jail for, you know, like spying on a minor when the actor himself actually has had a similar incident in his real life. 713-780-3776 to get in or to text in. Asymmetric Risk says questioning sick days is a HIPAA violation. Maybe it is. I don't know. I've always felt too guilty to actually lie about a sick day, though. Like I've never done it. I already muted you. Say Paul's like, how dare you not know the Mariners pitcher? What, Logan Gilbert? Listen, I'm wearing my half shirt. You guys can get me back into the light. It's all on the table for you. You just got to go to twitter.com/Gallant Says and vote. You can vote that you hate me too, but you know, I already know that. Are you going to vote for me to root for your team? What else do we have comments-wise? The roster itself, it really is just noteworthy that both Will Smith and Phil Maton did not make it. And we will see if the lack of outfield depth that the Astros have, because they didn't acquire anybody extra at the trade deadline, does come to bite them in the old keister. Chaz McCormick on the roster. Jake Myers on the roster is also a bit surprising because you haven't seen a whole lot of him of late. I'm assuming that's being done for defensive purposes, but I don't know. I mean, does he still have an arm? Do you still feel good about that guy being out there in center field? Maybe you're concerned that there's the potential for injuries, but you have McCormick, you have Myers, you have Mauricio Dubon, and we'll see how they put the lineup together when it comes to those corner outfield spots, and not right field, obviously, that's going to be Kyle Tucker. Left field, very curious as to how they play that on a daily basis. Is it going to be Yordan Alvarez? Is it going to be Trey Mancini? I doubt you'll see Mancini in left field all postseason. Is Mancini going to make it on the infield side of things into the first base slot? Or is that going to be Yuli Gurriel because of his defense and less so his offense, which has not been particularly good this year, but has been better over the last couple of weeks? Any thoughts on the Astros? They are welcome to the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. You can tweet me too, @GallantSays, or join on Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. Jose Altuve is the greatest Astro in team history. I don't think it's debatable. And when you hear these numbers, you are also going to agree with me. Move over Craig Biggio. Move over Jeff Bagwell. Move over Nolan Ryan. It's got to be Altuve when you hear these. You'll hear him next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.